Welcome, everyone. Let's have an AA meeting. My name is Tim, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too. I must have this thing. John B. is coming down from the Gwinnett Room. I used to go over there on Wednesdays at noon. And John would be there just about every Wednesday with Bill Root. They were so kind and let me join them for lunch. And I was early in sobriety. It really meant a lot to me. And thanks for coming, sharing with our group tonight, John.
All right. Thank you.
Good to be with you guys. I'm John Bowles. I'm an alcoholic. And as Don, I like Don from the Triangle. He kind of wears on you a little bit. He's an actor. Some of y'all probably know him. He always has a little saying every time before he shares, I'm sober by the grace of God and the company I keep today. Haven't found it necessary to take a drink. Then he says, I'm Don. I'm an alcoholic. Anyway, I'd like to, after all these years, I came to Atlanta in 1996 and I started going to Triangle. I used to see Don over there. And I think about that statement pretty much every time I come into a meeting. I'm sober by the grace of God and the company that I keep. I don't hang out like Pops used to always say. I'm going to talk a lot about him, but he used to say, if you go out and drink, I love you. We love you, but we probably won't see much of you because I don't hang out at the bars and I don't really hang out with people that drink excessively. So if you come back to the meetings, we'll be here and we love you. Anyway, and I was looking over at some of this stuff. I've been in AA for over 20 years, and I love AA. Sometimes I think like Gary Neidhart, he couldn't make it. Gary's, if any of y'all know him, he goes to a lot of meetings. He's very involved. He's the archivist, and Bill Roop sponsored him too. A lot of that stuff's over there from Bill Roop. He was my sponsor for the last 15 years of his life, and he was like my dad, really. He was 90 when he died. I actually brought him to his last. He came here. I was born in 1965. That's when he came to Atlanta. He was born in 1922. And he was 7 years sober when he landed in Atlanta. And he plugged down the street from here and started coming to NABA in 1965. And his last meeting he came to was over there. He died last year of cancer. Which is tough, even after it's been almost a year and a half. And I just think people say things about the Big Book and sponsorship. Your sponsor shouldn't be your friend. I mean, it was hands down one of the greatest relationships I ever had. I never could have set out to make it happen. He was like my dad. But I'll talk more about that. Anyway, I'm sober. And I like NABA. I don't know when the first time I came to NABA, but sometime in the 90s. But I got sober in Louisiana. I'm from Louisiana. I did a lot of drinking in New Orleans. When you shop for your groceries in New Orleans, you can smoke cigarettes and there's ashtrays and you can drink the beer and they'll swipe the bottle and say, and they'll just ring it up. When I went out to California and did that, they freaked out. I mean, like, and I'm looking, it's like, where's the ashtrays around here? Anyway, they threw me out. It's different in New Orleans, but it was a good place to drink. And I don't know. You hear about all these things about being alcoholic. I don't know. I mean, Papa Roop used to say, is alcoholism a disease? Well, the Big Book says it. I don't know. I mean, Marty Mann, the National Council on Alcoholism, was founded in the 60s. If it is a disease, I don't know. Is it a disease? Yeah, it's a disease, but hell, don't drink if you got a problem with it. So I don't get caught up on a lot of that stuff because I used to sit in meetings and debate with people and want to argue all the time. But I did a lot of drinking. My mom was an alcoholic. She went to AA in the 70s, and I have a couple of her books in New Orleans. I even have I know she got probably a year. She was a periodic. We would always find liquor in her sewing room, and she would get just completely trashed periodically. She was a nurse, which is an interesting topic. She was an RN. And so I play golf. My brother Jimmy is a year older than me. He's drinking every day. He doesn't have a license. He doesn't have a job. He doesn't have a place that he can call his own home. And he drinks every day. And I'm standing here 23 years sober. And we slept in the same room for 19 years. Why am I sober? It's only by the grace of God and the company that I keep today that I haven't found it necessary to take a drink. I'd like to see Jimmy sober. He came here. He had like 3 months. He was living at a little place. There's all kind of places where guys live around here, which I think is awesome. But Jimmy got into drinking and drugging in the 6th grade, 7th grade, acid, everything. And I took up golf. Did pretty well at it. We won the state championship in Louisiana. But then I got into drinking with some of the guys. And I think the first time I had a couple 16-ounce beers as a 16-year-old boy after playing golf, I got pretty buzzed. And it was a great feeling. And my mom was sick. She got cancer. This was in Shreveport. And then I started getting in trouble because I started drinking more often. And then I was introduced to the needle. Just speed. I like to do speed. I don't understand heroin addicts. Why the hell do you want to go to sleep after you buy that stuff? It's beyond me. I get up. Even if I do a downer, I want to pop up and start running around. I'm ready to go, man. But they like to fall asleep. And it kills a lot of them nowadays. It's pretty popular, unfortunately. A couple guys I've sponsored have died from it. Anyway, I got into shooting dope at 18. My mom died of cancer in Shreveport. And I went. That was probably the worst year of my life, 1984. And I shot crystal meth, stayed up all night landscaping. I was working in the sun, drinking all day, and hanging out with a group of people sharing needles. There was like 12 of us. Introduced my younger sister to the needle, who smokes crack every day. She's got like 30 days clean, and she can't stay clean and sober. Pops met her also. She's in Shreveport. She's, I think, 45. Anyway, just a lot of trouble. I went to jail 13 times. I ended up joining the Army. My dad gave me $200 to join the Army. I thought that was a good idea. That lasted 9 months. I had 4 Article 15s. I even spent 2 weeks in the Army hospital for cutting my finger because I went out to a bar. Anyway, I would just leave and then come back. I was in basic training in Fort Dix, New Jersey, and I would come back at 3 in the morning. They had basic training. Anyway, that didn't go very well, so they asked me to leave. And I went back down to New Orleans in 1984 or whatever and drank and shot dope and lived lonely and miserable for the most part. Was there a lot of fun? People say, oh, I don't know. I went to nightclubs, tried to pick up girls. One time I was in a bar in Shreveport, and I was doing cocaine, and this girl came up to me drunk. And I got to see, and I still never forgot that. I got to see what I sounded like. It was like she was slurring her speech. And I thought, really? You don't look that good. You know what I mean? It's like, wow. I'm a blackout drinker. I'd wake up and didn't know where my car was. I called the police one time and say my car was stolen. And it was down the street at the bar. In New Orleans, it's like Chicago where Pops is from, apparently. Some of you guys know. Any of y'all been to New Orleans? Yeah, and there's bars like all you had. I never even had a car. You had to just walk 5 minutes down the street, and there's 3 bars right there, and there's a strip club here if you walk 15 minutes that way. Anyway, they're all over the place. When I got to Snellville, I was like, wow, there's no bars around this place. I was sober, but I'm like, it's way different than New Orleans. Anyway, and I kept going to jail. Never did any prison time. And I ended up, my Uncle Bobby came and got me out of jail in January of 1990. Told me to go to AA, and I didn't listen to him. He had three sons that had a lot of problems. And then he came and got me out of jail in July of 1990 and told me to go to AA, and I did. And I went, and there was a guy in the meeting that I was working with. I was working in Belle Chasse. There was one road in, you know, where the boot goes down in the Gulf. I worked way down there along the Mississippi River. We were all drunks. And I got out of jail, and I went to AA. And the guy, that we called him a moderator, he was leading the meeting. And I thought he was funny as hell. And I remember, just as clear as today, I said, I'm sick and tired of everything going backwards. Even then, I wanted to have a sense of something in life moving forward. Something. That's why I don't understand my brother. You talk about the disease being so horrific and such bondage. That's why they have, Papa Roop does this retreat two times every year since 1975, or he did the retreat. That's like 70-something times. And one of the retreats is the spiritual gems in the big book, where somebody takes a chapter and they may go through a small statement or a word. And I mean, it's just some of the words you can pull out of the big book and just lean on, you know, promise, serenity, freedom. It's a powerful, those are powerful words that had no meaning before. And when I reflect back, it's a big deal to be sober, you know, and I don't think that way when I'm not coming to meetings regularly. Anyway, I went to AA, and I heard for a couple months, and I didn't drink. And I went out to California. I had a chance to leave that job I had and go out to California, and we were putting a marble and granite up on buildings in Los Angeles, on the federal building in Los Angeles. And I had a daughter at this time. I met a girl. I never really was that great with girls when I was drinking. But I did meet this girl that was a bartender, and she moved in, and she got pregnant. 9 months later, we had a little baby girl, Catherine, who's 25 now, who I raised all through sobriety by the grace of God and the company that I keep today, which is a beautiful story, which is a big deal. She just graduated from nursing school. Anyway, it's pretty beautiful. But at any rate, we went out to California, Pasadena, California. And there were everybody all over the building. It was in the union. I was in the union. There's the iron workers. Everybody's doing dope. I mean, a lot of the people are getting high all over the place. And my brother's out there. He's 7 years older. He likes to smoke weed. He's not a drunk like me, Bill. And so I started smoking weed. I went smoking weed with him. I went to a couple meetings at La Crescenta, California when I got out there. In the late 1990. Anyway, when I started smoking weed, I stopped going to AA. And then I didn't drink, though. So I was doing pretty well. But on January the 1st, 1991, I drank alcohol. And I woke up on the floor of my apartment. You know when even water tastes bad, how bad the hangover is? Anyway, the hangover was bad, where you could barely move. And I had said some rude things to my brother's wife's sister about her breasts. That didn't go over very well. And anyway, I started getting cocaine and shooting cocaine. And at that time, I was standing over the stove. My girlfriend took my daughter and went to New Orleans for a couple weeks. And I was standing over the stove rigging up coke. I always get a 10-pack of syringes. And at this time, I was having a hard time finding the vein. And when, I don't know, sometimes you have some clarity at different times. Everybody can relate to that. And I realized, out of the corner of my eye, I saw the sun was coming up under the curtains, and I'd been standing in the same place, rigging up shots of coke for like 8 hours, standing up. And something clicked in me, I don't know. And then drinking. And then so on February, when it was a Saturday, I was at the racetrack at Santa Anita. I don't know anything about horses. I don't know anything about gambling. But I'm out there gambling and drinking because I can't be around this crazy-ass woman. And I come home, and my daughter just started walking. And she starts running around the apartment and jumping on the bed. Anyway, I broke down crying, and I called AA. And the lady told me where a meeting was. I was in Monrovia, right next to Pasadena, California. She told me where an AA meeting was. So I went. I drove to the meeting, and I couldn't find it. We didn't have cell phones. I pulled over to use the payphone. I called. I couldn't locate the meeting. And so I went inside and got a hamburger, a fries, and a drink. And three police officers walked in. And they said they wanted to know whose car was parked on the sidewalk. I still had a Louisiana plate. I guess in California you don't park on the sidewalk. Anyway, I don't know how the hell I got out of that. He told me your eyes are red. And I really had a desire to move in the right direction. I honestly did. You could say God was working. I don't know. I should have started with a DUI in California. I had a DWI in Louisiana in 1986. Anyway, they told me to move my car. I pulled it over, and they left, and I drove to the only meeting I knew in California. It was 30 miles away, and I don't know what color chip I took. I remember walking up to the front. I don't know if they had white chips. But I haven't had a drink since that day, February the 23rd, 1991. And I think there was a movement in my heart and in my brain. I was 24 years old, or 25, whatever the hell I was. And I started going to AA. I started going to a 6:15 morning meeting at Spencer Recovery House. And I started meeting people, cool people. And I started going to meetings all over. I got a home group. I didn't even know it. My home group was a California Foothill meeting in Monrovia. And we had speakers like Johnny Harris. Clancy would come and talk at our meeting. I mean, they didn't mean that much to me back then, but little did I know it. These were like big names in AA. They still are. Eddie Cochran. A lot of them talked about Johnny Harris because he died in 84, I think. He impacted all of them in Southern California. Really, AA as a whole. Anyway, and I got involved. You know, Pops used to always say, AA is like it's like walking into a new house. And there's a library, there's a place with a fireplace, there's a kitchen. And when you go in the front door, sky's the limit. You can do anything when you get sober and walk into the door of AA. You can go into the library and you can study. And you can do anything you want to do, really. And I think back, I reflect back to the last 20-something years, that's been my experience. And I one thing I did do, this guy who insulted me, Reuben, he had a motorcycle. He had a brand new Honda, whatever the heck it was. What do they call it? A Shadow. Anyway, it was cool because when you get on a motorcycle in Los Angeles, you can ride right on the lane right between the traffic. You know what I mean? So when the traffic stopped, well, Reuben had a panel. That's what they called them, panels. And we used to go to the detox, Cider Detox, off the 605 freeway. There'd be like 45 to 50 to 70 men there. They were only there for 3 days as they'd rifle them in and out. It was through the state. And we'd go there and share for 15 or 20 minutes. He would share. We'd bring a couple guys and bring a panel into these guys. Little did I know what that was doing for my sobriety. And then Reuben took me down to Wilshire Boulevard. And there was this big old Jewish synagogue where they had tables set up where you could get your own panel. And I got a panel for the liver unit and the mental institution. And the mental institution, I mean, my wife's a registered nurse, so they go through training. They come to AA nurses. They have to experience different things, whatever field they work in. Anyway, I went to this mental institution. I had to drive like an hour and a half at LAX near the airport. And they locked the doors. And back then, the people they were chain smoking. These people were, like, seriously mentally ill. And I'm like, what the hell am I doing in here? It was scary, and they stunk. And I said, Ruben, what are we doing in here, man? He said, AA came in here in the early 40s, and some people hear the message. He said, go and do it for 6 months, and I did. And then we used to go to the liver unit where you walk from bed to bed, and people are swollen, they're all yellow. That was a powerful experience. Praying with some of them. or just listening to them, a lot of them were dying. What did that do for my sobriety? It was pretty powerful. But at this time, I already had a desire. I hooked up with this guy. We got an apartment. I just had a desire to learn. I'd get books from the library. I'd read about Lincoln. I'd read about Jefferson. And ended up wanting to go to school. My dad used to always say, son, you got to get an education. I guess I always heard it. I did sign up to LSUS before I joined the Army. I remember going to register on a hit of acid. I'm thinking, what a hell of a way to start. That's what I don't understand. People talk about growing up and going to college at Berkeley in the 60s, and I did acid every day, and I smoked weed every day. I drank a fifth of liquor every day, and I graduated. How the hell do you graduate from college doing that? Anyway, that's just mind-boggling to me. But that was the incubator of my sobriety. And my daughter's mom went to jail for manufacturing crystal meth. I was already sober like 2.5 years because I was going over and picking her up, and she would hang out with me at my apartment. And I went there one day, and the police had come in and raided the apartment. They took my daughter into a foster home. And I remember getting the number of that she was with DFACS in Los Angeles County. And I called, and the man, I gave him all my information. And then I called back because I'm like, where's my freaking daughter, man? I need to come pick up my daughter. She's 5 years old, almost five. And he called me back. He said, sir, you're not getting your daughter. Not with this record. I'd been arrested. Anyway, I don't have like 40 felonies and a murder charge, but I had been arrested 13 times. There were all kind of stupid charges, fighting with police officers. It didn't look very good to be a promising young parent. But I already had a new record he didn't know anything about. And I started going to court, and I got a court-appointed lawyer, Mrs. O'Brien. She was a fiery little Irish lady. And she really liked me after a little while. And we really clicked, and she fought for me. And it ended up, anyway, and I listened to people in AA. One time, I had to drive an hour and a half. Everywhere you go is an hour and a freaking half with the traffic in Los Angeles. It's insane. And I had to go pick her up, and they said, you have an hour. And, okay, so I'm sober. And I'm going to meetings. And I remember listening to Billy Bull, who taught this guy in AA, took me under his wing, and he taught me how to paint. And I painted houses to go through college. Anyway, and I had to go pick up Catherine, and the lady said, you have 1 hour. And I'm thinking, I'm driving with her to go to Bob's Big Boy, and it was October the 16th, 1994, and that was her fifth birthday. So I got her a little cake, and I got to bring my daughter back to this house somewhere in the hell in Los Angeles, wherever the hell I am, and I have to drop her off. And I remember driving away thinking, I wonder if she's probably laying in bed. I said, why is Daddy leading me here? What is going on? Anyway, but how did I do it? I don't know. I had encouragement. I had prayer. I was trying to trust God. This is a big deal, you know. I could have just took my daughter and drove away and did it my way. And the county, eventually, the Los Angeles County, would have did it their way. Some of you know about how that works when you fight authority. John Mellencamp Jr. talked about it, didn't he? Remember the songs from the 80s? Yeah, it's true. He probably learned like us, hardhead. Anyway, I got all these letters. I was going to DeVry. I was working in the union. All the Mexicans were making fun of this guy, Allen. And Allen, this is like 1992. Allen was going and buying CDs. He had two houses, which is like a big deal in Los Angeles. So I started listening to Alan. He was like my age. Alan said, you know, you should probably look into those computers. I think they're going to be a big deal one day. So anyway, I went down and signed up to DeVry, and I was working on my bachelor's. I had all A's, and I was in my third trimester, and I brought my report cards to court, and they had just changed judges. They had a judge that was like an older lady who was a judge for 30 years, and I brought 39 letters. I still have the letters. I brought all of these letters from professors and my boss and all these people in AA. Before there was email, really, we wrote letters. And the judge sat up there looking at them. And she said she just kept looking through the letters. And then she said, and my daughter had her lawyer. I had Mrs. O'Brien, and then there was the state who didn't want me to have her. Anyway, and the lady's looking through the letters, and she said, "Do you have anything to say?" I just told her I'm sober 2.5 years. You know, I mean, there's my record. And she looked up and she said, "Take your daughter and go home." And I was able to have a daycare there for her. I mean, I think it's tough being in your early 20s, in my opinion. People talk about the hardest age is the before you're one and you learn. I think the early 20s may be the hardest, next to adolescence. And I was able to have a daycare. I had an apartment, and the social worker would come over. I was going to meetings, going to school. I didn't go out on a date. All I did was go to school, and I made all A's and like 5 B's and nothing else, and graduated in 1996 from DeVry with a bachelor's of science in telecommunications management. And I came to Atlanta. My sister was out here, and the first thing I do is I get involved in AA. I start going to the Gwinnett Room. And I started calling places to see where's the drunks that need help. And I ended up at Summit Ridge, and I spent 11 years going there. And I just was raising this little girl. And I look back, and I think, what an honor. You know, I had this 5, 6, 7, 8-year-old little girl, 9-year-old little girl taking her to daycare, going through a hell of a lot of anger. You know, one time, anyway, I had a lady come up to me after one meeting. I just say, the hell with all that. She was like in the first grade. Anyway, I was pissed off one morning. God forgive me. You forgive me. And I popped her on her leg. She was crying. Anyway, I was so tormented by that. I remember being in Johns Creek eating with Michael Trapnell. I had this job at Intellinet as a consultant. And I remember weeping over my lunch because my daughter got out of the car in such a disturbed state. And I was angry. And I remember picking her up and like she didn't even think anything about it. She was laughing. I think about, there's good memories and there's memories that aren't too good, you know. It was a lot of growing, working the steps, working with men who could give me guidance, like Randy, who I still talk to every day. Anyway, and then I started getting involved at the jail, getting meetings going at the work release, Phillips State Prison. We started meetings back up there, and then I was at the Gwinnett Detention Center. We used to go there every Thursday night. Bill's son was in there, Bill Roop. And anyway, he and I struck up a relationship, and he asked me, do you want to come meet every Saturday morning at 7:30 at McDonald's in Lilburn? I just passed by that McDonald's today. So I did that for like a year and a half, sitting in front of this 78-year-old man. His wife was still alive. And just, if you know Bill Roop, you don't really get to talk a lot. He actually did. Everybody thought that was a joke. When he came back from World War II, he was taken over to sitting for an hour and a half to talk to Dr. Albert Einstein. And he got to, because he just came back from Germany. And Dr. Einstein wanted to know about his country. Bill Roop did all the talking. He talked to probably one of the brightest men that's ever walked the planet. And he didn't even let the man talk. I just think, but I could listen to him talk forever. Anyway, so I started meeting with him. I've always been really plugged in AA. I never have been married. I just actually got married 2 years ago for the first time in my life. Which is, I know a lot about women, though. That's the thing. I don't know nothing about no women's. Anyway, I just think, like Bill Roop used to speak all the time, obviously. When somebody's 50-something years sober, he would go and speak all over. So I'd take him all over. Anyway, I think back over the last 20-something years of not drinking and shooting dope and smoking weed all the time, I got a lot of good memories. You know, I've been to several international conventions in Toronto and San Diego. It's coming here next year, isn't it? I think a lot of people come to AA and they don't really realize what they're sitting in and sitting on. And they walk out on it. Which is tragic. But that's one thing Pop's always said. Let me just read this out of the big book real quick. Didn't have these in 1991. listen to this now. Tell me how complicated this is. This is what Pops, all he talked about in the last 5 years of his life. Don't miss it now. Love and tolerance of others is our code. Doesn't that sound simple? So he talked a lot about love. And I've never met anybody that just accepted people. He just met people everywhere he went. That wasn't just an AA. He'd walk through the restaurant and take 10 minutes to get out of there. He's talking to people at every table. He just, no matter who you were, what you look like, not all the time, but most of the time, he felt that he should stay in love. And what's the definition of love to him? I hope the best for you. You did me wrong. He had a guy staying with him. He moved a guy in with him. Jan died. His wife died of Alzheimer's. I think that's when I was with him for a few years before that, and we became like real best friends after that for the next 7 years after that. And his wife was sober since 58. But when he got to change her diaper, her Depends, rotate her several times a night. He took care of her until she died that morning when she passed away. And he really experienced love. He said he'd never, ever felt that needed in his whole life. And he was married 64 years. He said all he did was take and take and take. He never really stopped to listen to her. So, and I just think about how hard is it to really love and have tolerance for others. Half the time I don't have a clue, you know. Anyway, it may be a small pithy statement, but I think it's tremendous. I think it's the key to freedom. It's the key to stop with all the negative. And most of us in here do it, probably 85% of us. We don't have a clue. It's like a fish never even heard of water. He doesn't even know he's wet. They don't sit around and talk about water. I think that's how most people in AA walk around. It takes time to grow. You know, and the steps give tremendous freedom. I think this is right above that. I think this is a powerful, like, three sentences. I like to hear newcomers when they talk in meetings, how it's all changed. And I used to get so aggravated, and Pops would be like, it's true. That's how it is for this hour for them. This is what it says. This is chapter 6. We have entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And then it says, this is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Those things rob freedom and they rob serenity. And it says, this is where Bob Crawford pointed this out to me. It says, if these things crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. That's not what it says. What's it say? It says, when these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone. And then we resolutely turn our thoughts to helping someone else. Isn't that powerful? And that the old man that always used to say, I was going to a nursing home yesterday, and Pops used to always say, the big thing with him was living it, not just talking about it. Anybody, it doesn't take long to learn how to share in a meeting, but to live these things out. And that's what's tough, you know. Anyway, I love God. I think the whole key to the program is I didn't see that reading a big book in 1990. That's all I see now. 432 times, him, his, higher powers 2 times, God, him, his, pronouns, everything for God. 432 times in the first 164 pages. So to me, the Lord Jesus, I love the Bible. That's what I spend time reading the Word. Because like if you go on and read the bottom of that page I was reading, and then at the top, it pretty much says, you like that guy said, y'all catch what he said? He said, I'm so-and-so, I'm a recovered alcoholic. What? I don't get into all that anymore. All I know is it says the problem has been removed. As though it didn't even exist for us. We're not tempted. If tempted, we recoil from it like a hot flame. Like it's not even there. It's never even existed for us. But the last sentence is the whole key, as long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. And I think step 12 is a big, big deal, having a conscious contact. And I realized that's a gift that Bill Roop had, accepting you and me where we were. Not getting impatient and intolerant with others. realizing you, some of y'all are way past me. Some of you don't want to hear the Word of God. I'm going to tell you right now, I ended up going to get a Master's of Divinity. I went to seminary because I want to teach the Bible. I started my own business. I'm in the IT field. And I'm paying my bills. I save money. I pay a lot of taxes. I'm going to pay off my house next year. Pay a lot of taxes. That doesn't bother me. You call the old man. I tell you what. You call him up and tell him, I got to write out this check for the state or for the federal. And he's like, yay! Awesome! I mean, nobody talks like that. He goes, I hope you have to pay more next time. And that's how his attitude was about everything. And he's right. And he lived it. You know, he had this guy move in with him, 25 years sober. Dan's his name. How's that? Would I hit him if I saw him in the room today? No. Do I love him? Well, he you know what he was doing? I wouldn't hit him. He was this is an 88-year-old man. This is a senior citizen, AA or no AA. He was using Pop's credit card to buy stuff. But he was pretty smart. He would intercept the bill and then take Pop's checkbook to pay for it and kept the cycle going. And ran it up to like $16,000 or whatever. And he's on a fixed income. He has retirement and Social Security. He did, but anyway, and Pops forgave him immediately. He didn't want to press charges. He asked him to leave. Had no hatred. I mean, talk about resentment. I had a guy that owed me like $1,000. I wanted to blow up his freaking truck. I mean, instantly, you could see that he really, really, really lived it. But he was 80-something years old and 50-something years sober. So I think living the program is the key. And placing a lot of emphasis on the spiritual life. I mean, my marriage is going well. My daughter, my sister is 2 years older than me. She brought all this stuff. My mom was pinned. Nurses get pinned, right? And my mom was pinned 62 years ago this month in New Orleans. And my sister brought yearbooks from her nursing school and all these pictures of my mom being pinned. My daughter was pinned last month and received her bachelor's in nursing. And she just married this awesome, healthy Christian guy who hasn't drank in 4 years. Anyway, I just think that's sweetness in life. But on top of everything that there is, the greatest thing is me just sitting with a cup of coffee, opening up Nehemiah or Luke or Proverbs, and just sitting with him and say, Lord, I love you. And Pops used to, you know what, something that was important to him? He said that we love the Lord our God with all our heart and all our soul and all our mind and all our strength, and then love our neighbor as ourself. He thought that was very important. He thought there should be a lot of emphasis placed on that. But it's hard. Anyway, I'm grateful to be sober. And I'm grateful mostly that I have a relationship with a living God. And it's a relationship it works. And it works in all areas if I try to live it, you know. And then a big thing, I think, in AA, you know, AA started, there wasn't any big book. And I studied the history of AA. I've been to all the history sites. I've been to Dr. Bob's house. They were reading out of the Bible. And then they called and Bill Dotson was strapped down in a bed. And I think it's great. I think if they didn't have the idea to go out and reach out to another alcoholic, that's the only unique thing I think AA really has. Nothing in the steps is new. Restitution for harms done, none of that. Making amends, all that stuff that's been practiced for thousands of years. But Bill and Bob went down and talked to Bill Dotson, who was an attorney. I had this girl she's freaking nuts. She thinks AA is a bunch of trash. I mean, AA was started, do you know the education of Bill and Bob in Vermont? I mean, medical school? I think it takes a lot of education to be a surgeon and an attorney. I don't like attorneys. God bless y'all. But anyway, they could have had a Bible study and kept doing quiet time, which was beautiful. But after that, they went out and then they started finding drunks. They reached out to find drunks and help drunks. I think that's the one key AA has. That's all powerful.
And I think if for me, I haven't been doing that the way I should. And I suffer for it. I think there's something freeing about reaching out to help somebody else, even 20 years sober or 5 years sober or even to stay sober. I think that's really mainly the key. Anyway, I'm grateful to be sober and I love y'all. That's all.
Thanks, John. You can't say enough about Bill Root. And after saying that, I'd like to say a couple of things about him as well. One of the most vivid pictures I have in my mind is when seeing him leading a meeting at the 11 a.m. Bridge Builders Group, sitting cross-legged on top of the desk when he's like 88 years old. Just climbs right up there. The love man. He told a story here a couple of times. His story on Memorial Day back about 2010 or 2011 is on the website. It's just a wonderful story. So if you do visit the website, do listen to that. One time, I was concerned about him. I don't know why. He was in better shape than I was. But I wanted to show him some exercises I knew, kind of yoga stuff. So it'll make you live longer, Bill. I show them to him, and he says, well, let me show you what I do. And he said he woke up every morning, and he dressed in the armor of God, which is from Ephesians. And he combined that with an exercise routine. And he lifted his legs straight in the air without any assistance. I reached over to help him, going, how is this old guy going? And they just went up just like they were on a string. It's like he was a puppet. He was a phenomenal guy, and he truly was a love man. Thank you, John. I really appreciate you coming.
Broad highway, and that broad highway. And we'll all be together on that broad highway.